Hey, this is Jen Johans at FilmIntuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. Welcome back. Our hiatus for summer lasted a little longer than planned. As many listeners are aware, I was dealing with some autoimmune issues, a new diagnosis, and kind of had a huge flare, too many joints involved, wound up in the hospital for a while. That isn't fun to talk about, so we're going to move right along to the podcast. I was so excited to get back home, start building up a little bit of strength, and Zooming with some of my good friends to have these great conversations about movies to share with you all, which is kind of the name of the game here on Watch with Jen, where passion for cinema is what drives us. And I want to thank you so much for your listenership and support. I heard from a lot of people. It was very sweet. So I do want to say thank you so much. That's really kind of you. If you're new to the podcast, or you haven't tuned in for a while, or you're returning after a few seasons to season 6, this year, with everything going on, so much darkness in the world, we're kind of doing things a little bit differently. We're going for some episodes that are just plain fun. They're like hangout episodes. We still do our research. We still prepare for the pod. You won't just have people only sticking with Wikipedia or something. So it's still hopefully on the level that you love. But this year you're going to hear some topics that are just, you know, why we fell in love with the movies in the first place. Like, you'll have an episode on video game movies and another one on Jackie Chan coming up very soon. So without further ado, we will dive into Bring Me the Hair of Andy Garcia, which is the name of the episode as determined by Jed Ayers, who, as you'll hear, had a different idea about what he thought this episode was going to be. And I wound up having to kind of talk him into doing it. So it was a lot of fun, and I hope you dig it. Thanks, guys. Well, I am thrilled to have one of my best buddies, Jed Ayers, with me. And Jed, we are actually talking on the 3rd anniversary of when we did our great Mr. In-Between chat. Instagram, let me know. Yeah, Instagram put up the photo and it was like, oh, that was 3 years ago. Yes.
I did not know that.
So today is a good luck day to talk to Jed. I mean, every day is a great day to talk to Jed, but there you go. So how are you?
I'm doing okay. Just treading water, but not under. So about as good as can be expected.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're all doing right now. We're just sort of hanging in. Yes, for dear life. And we're watching lots of movies, like these good Andy Garcia movies. So our friendship is kind of, I mean, we have a lot of movies in common, but Black Rain, of course, has been kind of an ongoing part of our friendship. You sent me the Black Rain movie tie-in, which was amazingly kind of you when I was going through a health scare. And, you know, I mean, who doesn't love Andy Garcia shouting? So, of course, I wanted to talk to you about Andy Garcia, who I think is one of our more underrated actors. What are your thoughts on Andy?
On Andy Garcia, I would like to preface this just by saying Jen invited me to do the Andy Garcia episode. And
yes,
we had talked a lot off screen about Andy Garcia and, you know, some of our favorite big moments that he has in some of our favorite films, like Black Rain or 8 Million Ways to Die or The Untouchables. And
yeah,
I had joked that we should, because I'm balding and I have a very, you know, perhaps unhealthy fixation on his incredible head of hair. All the different.
Hey, I'm jealous of that head of hair. Yeah.
All the ways he's worn it. All the different styles he's had throughout his career, and I've just kind of fascinated by his hair and the hair collections in his films. He's often paired with you know, some other folks with incredible heads of hair. And I had only half jokingly suggested to Jen that we do a podcast series called "Bring Me the Head, the Hair of Andy Garcia."
That's right.
And so she, when she asked me to be on the Andy Garcia episode, I was first picturing like the Dennis Hopper episode that she had
Oh,
done.
yeah.
You had lots of people on, each one talking about, a couple of movies, and I had participated in that. And so
That was fun.
I was trying to think of what, that this was going to be that, she talked to a bunch of other people about Andy Garcia movies. So I was trying to pick movies that he was a kind of the star of, rather than, in just part of an ensemble, even if he had great moments. And B, things that I didn't think other people were likely to pick in this,
Okay.
this episode that I was picturing. But it turns out, no, I'm just the only guy on here, and we're,
We're just hanging out talking about Andy.
we are, but I mean, it's
So I
kind of
kind of dropped the
laughable to me.
ball. Is that what we're saying?
No. I'm just, I'm the guy who perpetually does not get the assignment. I
No.
don't understand the concepts being pitched to me often, and
So
ask
we're
my
just gonna
wife.
wing it.
Trying
Yeah.
to communicate with me is very very difficult. But I
No.
do think it's objectively hilarious that this is, quote unquote, the Andy Garcia episode, and the pictures I've picked to talk about are, ones that likely people have forgotten if they ever knew they existed.
That's
But
kind of,
they are
yeah.
films I'm fond of, and yes, I like Andy Garcia. I do find him to be a very fun on-screen presence. I mean, I was first introduced to him, I think, in The Untouchables, which came
Yes.
out when I was, very young, and it was just the coolest thing I'd ever seen, and he was one of the cooler parts of it. I mean, he was certainly cooler than Kevin Costner,
I know. And
there.
he immediately was going toe to toe with Sean Connery, like shouting
Yeah.
right back at him in his first scene.
And
Yeah.
that shouting, man, that shouting is his,
That's Garcia.
I think we're gonna touch on it. We're
Couple
obviously
times.
gonna talk about another Italian act, or well, about an Italian actor who shouts a lot,
Yes.
and where they cross in their career. But yeah, I'm happy to be here. I just
You're a little confused. Yeah.
maybe we'll just call this the first installment in a series, Bring Me the Hair of Andy Garcia. But
Okay. We're just kind of winging it. No, and you know what? That's a good thing. This is actually my first episode back after a few months off.
Is it?
It's the first one I'm
Jen,
recording. I
welcome back.
actually.
It's been too long.
I know. I thought it would be fun to talk to like good friends first, kind of ease me back into it. So I hit up Jed because Jed made he always checks in on me and he makes me smile a lot. And weirdly enough, on the night that I was like rushed to the ER and wound up having to stay for like a little over a week, Jed was the one who was like texting me when I was on the stretcher. I think you were just at work and bored in the middle of the night or something and just checking in. And I thought, you know, Jed's awesome. So I definitely wanted to talk to you as soon as I got back. So this was, I thought, a fun idea. Normally I let my guests choose, as everyone knows, the topic, but I was just thinking my friendship with Jed and our weird association with Andy Garcia. But you know what I love about my show is that, not to be like what I love about the show, but we do kind of celebrate things that everybody overlooks, whether it's TV shows that don't get talked about too much or forgotten 90s crime movies or whatever it is. It's sort of the we are cinephiles or we just love what we love and make no apologies. There's no such thing as guilty pleasures. So we're here to talk about some random Andy movies and hopefully, you know, make each other laugh and hopefully you'll enjoy it too, everyone. Yeah. So the movies that Jed went with, when he thought that this was going to be part of a bigger, assignment, were Internal Affairs, which is, a classic, good old Mike Figgis. And then we have Godfather 3. That was from the big year, 1990. I think he was in 3 that year. And that was, he'd already had his breakout in Untouchables. We'd already seen him do a few things. He was in the first episode of Murder, She Wrote, I found out this morning, which I love. And so he'd done a couple things, but 1990 was when he was sort of like bursting onto the scene. So 2 of our movies are from that pivotal year. And then Jed chose Desperate Measures, which I had never seen, and I couldn't believe I'd never seen it. So that was a fun one to rent for this.
Yeah, those are our films that probably not picked. Internal Affairs by certain crime aficionados, but nobody picks The Godfather 3 to talk about, really, and nobody picks Desperate Measures, which I suspect is the least like the least known, the least likely to have been seen, and the most likely to
Yeah.
forgotten probably by folks who've seen it, of
That
these.
was the thing. I was thinking, I probably would have rented it. It's Marcia Gay Harden, Andy Garcia, Michael Keaton, but and Brian Cox is in it, but I just like could not remember it. So I counted it as a first watch. But yeah, nobody ever says, "I love Godfather. Let's talk about number 3." And I think he's the best thing in this movie. And I think, he got nominated for an Oscar and also a Golden Globe for his performance. He's amazing in it. So, I believe that came out around Christmas. I guess we should sort of jump into Internal Affairs, which has one of the best, GIFs or GIFs, that you can find on the internet when he decides to grab a chair and just slam it down. While he's frustrated in the office with Laurie Metcalf, it's just one of those punctuations of, being frustrated. And this is also right after he made Black Rain in '89. So we were getting used to like Shouty Andy or his ability to do that and, go toe to toe. Like we said, also 8 Million Ways to Die. He has a very memorable sequence with snow cones. So, yes. So I think all of that stuff really set him up well for Internal Affairs. Have you always been a fan of this one?
I have always been a fan of this one, but it is one that there was a long stretch. I'm not sure when exactly I first saw it. It definitely would have been in the 90s, probably around 94, 95. So probably been out for a few years. I
Yeah,
was
me
aware
too.
of it, but I was pretty sheltered and
Yeah.
not able to see a lot of movies. And so, I was definitely aware of it when I saw it and I liked it. But as I've kind of come into, my identity as a crime guy and understood more about what it is that really draws me to movies or stories and characters and what I, what I'm really interested in, it has really come to the fore as one of my favorites. It's a really great distillation of some of the, kind of nastiest, darkest tropes and
Yes.
things that I am drawn to in fiction in general. And you mentioned Black Rain, and of course in Black Rain he is, Michael Douglas gets to be the brooder in that one, and Andy Garcia is the kind of light on his feet. He does get to shout, and but he's more the he's not comic relief, but he's kind of a light touch. Michael Douglas is there to be serious, and Andy Garcia is there to kind of lighten the mood a little. But in this one, he's the brooder, and
Yeah.
he is the as much as he is out front, and the protagonist of the film. It's a two-hander, and he is, I'm afraid, outshone by Richard Gere's turn as the
Oh my God, Richard Gere. He is the better part for sure. He is like the you're gonna remember me in every moment part. And I love how he weaponizes his sexuality for this. Yes.
Yeah.
That
Well, just a few minutes earlier, though, you'd said something about frustration, and I thought, yeah, frustration is really what the
yes.
film is about and what's driving. Oh, it was the GIF, the GIF, the
Yes.
slamming the chair down in frustration. This film really is all about sex and specifically, a very macho male
Yes.
version of sex and what that means, both as far as you're standing with, as a heterosexual with women, and not just your wife, but women in general, and as and your sexual standing among men.
Yes.
There's a strong homoerotic undertone
Just
and
like Black Rain, yeah.
to this film that's very, I
Of
mean,
the
it's almost
time.
text and not subtext, but Andy Garcia is the frustrated one.
Yes.
This film introduces him as a cop just starting out in Internal Affairs Division, and he's married to the lovely Nancy
Nancy Travis.
Travis, but we get the idea that though they love each other, things in their sex life are pretty kind of stagnant, kind of they're frustrated. And as the film goes on, that becomes a strong an increasingly strong theme and driving force. He, as all good cop movies do, he becomes so obsessed with, his target, the Richard Gere character, that he neglects, he's neglecting his wife. She's literally throwing herself at him, and he's like,
Yes, I know.
no, I have to work. I have to, I have to nail him before I can nail you.
Pretty much. Yes, you're right. It is more text than subtext in this movie. And there's something about this being a recurring theme. I don't know if it's because he's so pretty, but when you have Andy Garcia in a movie, you just can't help but use him like that. And it's been since 8 Million Ways to Die, it was like a dick measuring contest with those snow cones. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's great scenes between Gere and Andy Garcia where like the showstopper really in the elevator, there's an elevator confrontation between Gere and Garcia that is shot very much. They're both fully clothed, but the way they're kind of grappling with each other and the intensity of it almost seems to be shot like a sex scene. It's and Gere is calling him out on his machismo, saying he's overcompensating for
Yes.
his shortcomings, and anyway.
It's very like Othello and Iago again. Like he immediately charges, "Oh, I slept with your wife," and Andy Garcia like believes him, and it's because he's so like preoccupied with this man's sexual prowess. I mean, we should explain his character is a dirty cop, and he's somehow able to support like three ex-wives, eight children, and God knows how many mistresses, on a patrolman salary. And so, something is rotten in Denmark. I could not believe, the character that he kills. That was an amazing twist. I had seen this movie a few years ago, but I forgot about that. And yeah, I think also the rest of the cast is really good in this one. Like you mentioned, Nancy Travis, Laurie Metcalf. Billy Baldwin. Annabella Sciorra is one of my favorite people in this era. Oh, and we have Xander Berkeley, who, it's always good to see, and Michael Beach. Yeah, great cast.
Great cast. I love the way it's about triangles to
Yes.
the two characters, Garcia and Gere, coming up against each other. And there's in the early scenes they have together, there's always a third person that is in the scene and often in the shot with them, and they're kind of circling each other, and that third person is always kind of what they're battling over, whether it's the prostitute that Gere brings into their conversation,
Yes.
and or it's the Billy Baldwin character, the cop that Garcia knew in the academy and is now his
Yeah.
partner. It's the Nancy Tr well the later in the film they do have scenes just the two of them, but they're always grappling over a third person and who has control and who has
Yes.
sway and whose lead is this third person going to follow. And it's again all very kind of
Yeah.
metasexual
Yeah, they're all
the word.
jockeying for power over one thing. Yes, for
Yeah,
one
and
person.
yeah, so on the one hand it's a pretty sleazy
Oh my gosh, the way it talks about and treats its women is like every time you watch it, you're like, ugh, I want a shower.
yeah,
Yes.
it's a pretty sleazy
Yes.
thriller that people might throw away
Various reasons,
for
yeah.
various reasons, but I
Watch it
it's
again.
interesting to me that it's a Mike Figgis film, and
You
his
know,
career and
yeah.
his it was really his kind of breakout film, but he had a short turn. It was the beginning of his really kind of main
Yes, I
Hollywood
mean,
run. But his I don't think he's made a feature in many years by now, but he's an interesting figure, more probably associated with some of his formal experimentation movies and things like that. But this was his kind of I'm not sure. I don't feel like I know enough about him and his films to say, oh, this is the real Mike Figgis touch. I mean, some of the stylistic stuff, but kind of what his themes and things like that are. I'm not sure that I can
Yeah.
really identify those, but when you get someone who's not particularly interested in playing the blockbuster game or whatever for their career, and the few things I do know about him, about his interest in music, and he did compose the score or co-composer of the score for this film. He's got a lot of he's not the blockbuster filmmaker really. This is
Yeah,
probably the closest he got to it.
I was going to say, and I think you hit the nail on the head there. He's like an unlikely person you would imagine to direct this. He had done Stormy Monday, which now everybody loves critically. There's been some wonderful essays about it. Roger Ebert's, of course, is amazing. And I think it was Matt Zoller-Zeitz and Kim Morgan made a video of it with Kim reading it. And so you can find that Stormy Monday has been kind of claimed, but this was definitely the breakout. And it helped revive the career of Richard Gere. And the next one he made was Mr. Jones again with Richard Gere. Leaving Las Vegas is, of course, his most famous film. He did one I really liked called One Night Stand with Wesley Snipes, Robert Downey Jr., Anastasia Kinski, and I really liked that movie. Don't sleep on it. It's excellent. Loss of Sexual Innocence, I remember seeing when it came out, but I couldn't tell you anything about it. And then, of course, he started doing experiments in digital filmmaking with time code. That was his thing with the four screens simultaneously at once. He also, he messed around in the early aughts. He did like Cold Creek Manor. He also directed documentaries. Of course, the new one, 2025, is Megadoc, which is the documentary about following the production of Megalopolis by Francis Ford Coppola. So there's another little link to our next film. And Andy Garcia, but you kind of hit the nail on the head talking about him being unlikely for this because that is actually how he got his start in music. He said he was, quote, living a lie. I lived a lie. He was at the Institute of Education, University of London, bluffed his way into music courses without being able to read music at all. So he did this for 3 years and he said he learned studying harmony, counterpoint, composition, but yeah, he could not read music. So that's amazing to me. And it shows, so he's kind of an outsider looking in. And I feel like outsiders, or people that don't fit in or are on the fringes is kind of one of his themes. Yeah. But I agree with you. It's an entertaining movie. It's sleazy as hell. You definitely feel like you need a shower, but these actors going toe to toe are so good. I do think, by this point, of course, Garcia had been up with like Jeff Bridges and Sean Connery and Michael Douglas, some larger than life people, but I do think Richard Gere really embraced this challenge to go super dark. And yeah. So it's good for that reason alone, too.
And if you're a crime fan, if you're a fan of
Yeah,
like say James Ellroy, who
for
is one of
sure.
my favorites, this is not a James Ellroy adaptation, but this is one of the better James Ellroy movies
That's a good point, Jeff.
that have
Yeah.
been made. Like if James Ellroy had written this, Richard Gere would be the main character, for sure. And there would be a third character, who, a third cop character, that was, maybe the Billy Baldwin character would have a bigger role, in the film, but there's a real Elroy-esque kind of sensibility to the dirtiness, the Richard, the Peck, the Richard Gere character. What a name, what a,
Yes.
but, he,
Richard Peck, or no, it's Dennis Peck, isn't it?
Dennis Peck, yeah,
Yes.
or
Such an unlikely name, too.
Dennis
Yeah.
Jack, if you switch the first letters, right? It's
Yeah, yeah.
a very phallic sounding name, but he's just a really delicious turn on his kind of sensuality that had been used
Yes.
so well in American Gigolo and Breathless, things like that, leading up to it.
Officer and a gentleman, yeah.
Yeah, so he's really hitting a
Going
different
for
tone,
it.
but using his charisma and his good looks, and my God, can anybody else get away with, I mean, if you dress the way they do in this film today, you're gonna get laughed out of off the screen unless you're fucking Richard Gere. I don't think anybody's gonna laugh at his polo shirt with the collar turned up, tucked into the faded jeans without a belt. I mean,
It's like
motherfucker, pull
William
it off.
Peterson, eat your heart out,
Right.
basically.
Holy
Yes.
shit. Yeah, it is very to die in L.A. Sort of vibe.
Yeah. This is kind of like the hangover of that, essentially.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. But I would be remiss if we stopped talking about internal affairs before I said, this may be the worst haircut Andy Garcia has
I
had
agree with
in a
you.
film.
He's
This
given
is,
such a square police officer haircut. Yeah.
it is a strange haircut too. It is,
Yeah,
it's
it's.
kind of buzzed, but it stands up so, like it's so thick and so heavy, and his widow's peak, which is, just such a signature, is standing up And in
Yeah,
Portland, Ford,
it
I
is
mean, it's.
not a good look. It is like, I mean, we're going to talk about The Godfather, but going back to The Godfather, look how they massacred my boy. Yes, they massacred his hair, his beautiful hair. Yes.
Yeah, and this, and I mean Billy Baldwin too.
Oof, yeah.
What a head of hair on that man. Pretty much
Yeah.
any Baldwin, you're gonna, you might as well bring in a sculptor to have a
Yeah.
field day with their hair. And what a incredible peacock swoop he's got in this film. I love the first scene of Garcia and Gere and with Billy Baldwin in between them.
Yes.
Three very striking looking, masculine, film icons, of the moment. And, that the different peacocking, looks that they each have are,
They're cocks of the walk, Jed.
they
Yes.
are, they're at they're notable. They are,
Yep.
distinct. And, what a incredibly valuable time capsule this film is, even if you're not into the sleazy crime stuff.
Yes, very much so. And this came out in January of 1990, again, coming off the popularity of Black Rain. And then he takes the role of Vincent Mancini, aka Vincent Corleone, Sonny's illegitimate son in Godfather Part 3. Of course, Coppola famously was not going to make a third part, but then with the unfortunate failures of financially anyway, they're very good films of The Cotton Club, especially that recut edition, and also One from the Heart. He needed money for his studio. There's a really good book that was just published about Coppola and his own studio and just how lavish it was. And you need to read that. But so Godfather 3 was, I think, looked at with like hesitation. Are they just cashing in? It is not a great film on the level of the first two movies. It's flawed. I kind of prefer the new cut, The Death of Michael Corleone, which is actually the title he wanted to give it, and so did Puzo. But Paramount was like, no way in hell. And so they went with Godfather 3, but I do prefer the coda cut of Death of Michael Corleone. I think it jumps into the action a little bit faster. Of course, everyone rips Sofia Coppola to shreds, but she was not supposed to be in it playing the daughter of Michael Corleone. It was supposed to be Winona Ryder, who pulled out for personal reasons, and she was also overworked at the time. And then, of course, it was kind of marred by tragedy. Rebecca Schaefer, who was an up-and-coming actress, was supposed to be auditioning for it, and she was waiting to get the script actually at her door. And she opened her door to a stalker that day who tracked her down through the DMV. And she said, please don't come back to my house. He went and had breakfast. Then he came back and shot her. So by that point, it was kind of becoming a cursed part. And so I think Sophia just kind of stepped in. And, unfortunately, she took the brunt of the attacks of the film itself. Like, I think people were particularly cruel to her. She's not a great actress by any means, but she's not terrible. She's playing an awkward 19 or 20-year-old woman, so I think she does what she can. But when you're acting opposite, I think the best thing in the movie, Andy Garcia, a lot, and of course you're acting opposite Al Pacino and Diane Keaton. It's very challenging. I also love Joe Mantegna in this movie. My favorites in order are Garcia, Mantegna, and then Talia Shire, because I love what they did with her character. She's like Norma Desmond. Yes.
The I watched the director's commentary on that, and
You did? Cool.
Coppola said speaking of the film and his his movie
Yeah.
and the way his daughter was attacked,
I know.
kind of bore, like you said, bore the brunt of the criticism for the film. He said that it there's no worse way to pay for your sins than to have your children be included in the punishment.
Oh, yes,
And
that's a
he
good
said, you know,
point.
that's really the theme of the movie itself. You know, by the end of the film, Michael's children, you know,
Yes.
he sacrificed his brothers and things like that throughout the other films. But, you know, by the end of the film, his children will be paying for
I never
his
thought of it like that. Wow, that's brilliant.
and to have
That happened.
Scalia in the role, and also, you know, being the sort of sacrificial lamb for the
Yes.
film, and for Coppola himself, and you know what, people, of course, you know, attacked for hubris and things like that. To have her bear the brunt of it, I thought that was a pretty poignant and incisive remark about
Yes.
it. So I'm
Very
curious,
much.
Jen, as
Yes.
I know you and I have talked about the Godfather and my, now obviously I like these films a lot,
In
but I don't hold them
the
in the
esteem, I
same
do. Yeah.
personal affection the way that a lot of folks do, in a way I know that you do. And so I am curious, when was your, you know, were you from how familiar with the other films were you before you saw this one? What was your
Sure.
relationship to this movie when it came out,
I mean, you
or
know
when you
what's
saw it?
funny? I had already seen a lot of things with Al Pacino and these other actors by the time I finally saw it. I think it was ninth grade, eighth or ninth grade. But I saw my mom loved these movies, and it became like a tradition in our family that we watch all three around Christmas. She's Italian American on her family's side, and so we just kind of see this as a movie about family. They're, you know, I mean, this one is King Lear basically, but they're kind of operatic and Shakespearean and Greek tragedy elements. So I love it. There's always something universal that you can learn from it, relate to it. And so I just grew up watching these. I mean, we would watch them around the holidays, but then, you know, if they were on cable, because back then you weren't just clicking a movie. You had to kind of, as Jed knows, you had to kind of settle for whatever was on TV at the time. These were always on. Of course, they were edited, unfortunately. I've had this in every single version. So I had the VHS tapes, I had the DVDs originally, and then the Blu-rays. And then as soon as I got the Blu-rays, that 4K set came out. So I've owned it in every single version. I think it's a series I would own. I haven't had it in, I should say, LaserDisc. That's the one I'm missing. Yes. But other than that, I think this is the film that I probably. Okay, the last two weren't purchases. They were as a critic, but otherwise, the one I probably purchased the most would be the Godfather series. So I love it. When I am asked, like, what is my favorite movie? I just say the Godfather, and I actually mean all three together. So when I saw this originally, I saw the entire series kind of within probably one weekend.
Wow.
And so it was a letdown, I will admit, but and the cousin stuff, of course, is creepy as fuck. You know, I liked the spirit of it. My favorite character from Godfather One was Santino, James Caan, Sonny. And so it was kind of like having Sonny back, but Garcia was given the note that he was going to play all of the men in that family. So he even plays a little bit of Michael. You see a little bit of Fredo. And so it's great. You also see a little bit of Brando at the end when the way he's sitting in a chair outside in Sicily is interesting. Yes.
Yeah, well, I came to them also, saw all three Godfather films. I
Yeah.
don't know if it would have been a weekend, but probably a week anyway that
Yeah,
I
yeah.
saw. And, you know, I was in my 20s when I
Okay.
first saw them. You know, I was, you know, supposedly a movie fan, but
Same,
had never seen them.
yes.
So they were, to see them all at once, I do feel like I didn't get why this one was so unpopular. I knew it was unpopular. I didn't understand why it was so unpopular, because it did feel like it belonged with the other two. Now, watching the entire series, more, I can definitely appreciate, the long break in between two and three, and one and two feeling so perfect. Why would you, why do you need to tack something on to the end of this? But I do think it's not a bad movie.
I agree.
It's not on the level of the other two. I do think, some of the set pieces, the big helicopter assassination scene and the horseback assassination scene, or they're a little, I mean, they're
Throwback.
automatic, but they're a little silly. But I gotta say that final opera
Oh
sequence
my
is
gosh, that's
such an
amazing, isn't
incredible
it?
showstopper
It's like
of
40
just,
minutes,
it's
basically, the
like
last, yeah.
silent filmmaking,
Yes.
essentially. I mean, it's like that last 12 minutes of the Mohicans or whatever.
Yes.
It's really just incredible image after incredible image, visual storytelling and
Yeah.
the great looking stuff. Watching it this last time, I was a little on the fence about some of it, but that last section just is so incredible. I was like, no, forget it. This is a good movie. This is really, really special stuff. This is some of the best stuff Coppola has done. And, that sequence, especially, I would really like to see, Coda. I have not seen that cut.
Okay. Yeah, I think you
But
would
I'm
like it.
curious
It
about.
does, yeah, jump into the action a little bit better, and I think it plays better overall. But and I like how what Jed was saying, that sequence is unbelievably good, and it is also taking a bit from history, which I didn't realize and I would never have known or appreciated as a teenager when I first saw it, but like about the Pope John Paul I conspiracy theories, he hadn't really reigned long before he was found in his dead in his bed, and then of course the thing under the bridge, that was let's see, the head of the Italian head of the bank Ambrosiano was found hanging under Blackfriars Bridge in London in 82. Unclear whether that was suicide or murder. It looks like in 2002, courts in London ruled murder. So, like some of this stuff is coming from history and some of it, linking it to Michael Corleone in an interesting way. I got a little emotional in the sequence where we see Michael have the stroke and he first he's like being very actorly and very Al Pacino, thunder can't hurt you. But then he jumps into shouting Fredo's name, and I don't know how many times I've seen this movie, but just hearing it really got to me in this time when I was watching it. I also really love the moment where Garcia and Sophia are standing in front of Genco olive oil because it's just like the shot from part two. So that's very cool.
That is cool. The I gotta mention Andy Garcia's hair in this one, because this is a very unique hair
Yes.
movie for one of our most important hair actors.
Yes.
He, playing James
Listen.
Caan's son and Al
Yeah.
Pacino's nephew, he's got Al Pacino in the eyes, but he's kind of doing James Caan in the hair.
Yeah.
He's colored it some. It's got some highlights or something, and it's wavy. I don't know if he's permed it, but like, he has really transformed into, okay, I can now see Al Pacino and James Caan being in the same family
Yes.
with
Oh,
him in
that's a great
between them.
point. Yeah.
He's really kind of bridged that gap. And yeah, I'm this movie deserves to exist.
Yes.
Or Andy Garcia's hair, even if you took out the fantastic, opera sequence at the end, preserve this movie, please. Put his head of hair in the Louvre, or.
Yeah, and the shouting and the sequences and just the showdowns between him and Mantegna are
Right.
amazing.
The,
Bastardo, yes.
you know, as
Give it to me
Pacino,
one time, you know. He loves
I
to
feel
shout,
like
yeah.
he's taken he really takes Pacino's
Yes.
shouting and just does that. I don't think he's someone who shouts his way through movies. He's
No, not at all. When he shouts, it's for a reason. Yes.
but it's one of his best tools, and he
Yeah.
is a reason to pull it out in most of his films. And it was there before this, but I do think that this was kind of the passing the torch of the shouting mantle here.
I agree with you. I think he's very effective in it. And yeah, he kind of it's a thankless role because you're playing it's so stressful because you are playing opposite these gods and the legend of the previous films. But I think, you know, I agree with you. This movie does totally deserve to exist. I know there was a lot of criticism too, and that's really lame, because he's Cuban and people were like, oh, he's not Italian. And it's like, neither was James Caan. And you know, that the same thing has happened, when Jennifer Lopez in like Wedding Planner was playing an Italian and people had pro it's like, these are actors. If they look the part and they're the right people for the role, like, it's fine. What is your problem? And I totally buy him exactly what Jed said as a member of this family. So he will always be a Corleone to me.
Yeah, and I mean, shit, Pacino played Cuban in Scarface,
Exactly.
so
Yeah.
they get to they can trade off there.
Yeah, their heritage and whoever they're playing, character is a character. Yes.
I will say the writing in this one, when you watch, and when I say the writing, I mean the dialogue.
Yes.
The dialogue in this one does sound kind of dumb compared to the other, the sort of
Yeah, I
the
agree
other
with
the
you.
previous two. It's really kind of clangy and just like right on the nose sort of lines. And I don't know if that was because the movie was going to be so long and they were trying to just, what if we just have you say exactly what the audience needs to know,
Yeah.
scene to scene here. But I do forgive all of that, for his hair and for the final
Yes.
sequence.
Yeah, I agree with you. The dialogue is a little clumsy, especially too the dialogue with him and Sophia's character. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't work. But you know, it's a good movie. Watch it. Maybe don't just single this one out as I'm going to sit down and watch Godfather 3. Watch it as part of the series. I think that helps. And maybe try the Coda Cut and see what you think, everyone, and which one you prefer. But yes, I think it's great. And I also love Talia Shire in this. I feel like she really gets a chance to kind of come into her own. And I like the way they mirror her and Andy Garcia's characters because she is his ally. So they're often framed opposite each other, they're sitting near each other. They're also the wardrobe that they wear a lot is kind of similar or in similar shades. She's kind of doing the elder Italian woman thing of wearing black a lot. And so yeah, I really like there's a lot of things to enjoy about this one. But this brings us to, of course, the 90s. He played all kinds of roles and Desperate Measures is, as Jed was saying, a film that either people didn't know about or didn't see, or they saw it and forgot. And I'm definitely one of those people. It's one I know if I would have seen the trailer, I would have been, like first in line. I love Michael Keaton and Andy Garcia, Marcia Gay Harden, and also the premise. It's a thriller. It's kind of a standoff over, dad doing whatever to get some bone marrow for his kid with leukemia, and it's going to come from criminal Michael Keaton, who of course is using it as a cover to escape. I mean, that's a given. They know that right away. And you know what? Shit goes down in a diehard, high concept 90s way. So Jed, take it away.
Yeah, so this one, Andy Garcia plays a cop, and not
Again.
just a cop, but a cop with a sick son and a dead wife.
Yep, he has
And
both of those.
he has both. So he's got all the qualifications to finally do something.
Yeah.
And what he's got to do is get, a bone marrow transplant for his son. And the film starts off
He's
with Andy
breaking
Garcia breaking into. As a San Francisco police officer
in.
flashing
Breaking.
his badge saying San Francisco police, and that gets him into FBI headquarters after lunch,
Yes.
after
Yeah, don't think too hard
business.
about this movie. There's so many of those moments. Yes.
He gets in, he flashes his police to get into the Federal Bureau of Investigation office, and is very clearly doing something he shouldn't be, is illegal. He even takes a guard hostage, like puts a
Yeah.
gun to the guy's head without his face being covered. Everybody's gonna know
Yes.
he is the guy who is doing this crime. He's treating it like a crime,
Yes.
and he's pulling a gun on another law enforcement officer. Everybody knows it's him, but he's got a sick kid.
Yeah.
And so he's using the FBI, database to find a genetic match for his own son, to get a bone marrow transplant. And of course, the only option now is serial killer Michael Keaton in Hannibal Lecter mode as
Yeah.
this mastermind, incredibly intelligent, off the charts intelligent,
Bad
guy
mofo. Yeah.
who's spent most of his life in prison because he kills and boom boom and can't imagine a god who would give a shit that he did, right?
Yeah.
So the movie really, again, Keaton gets the chewier,
Yes, for
juicier
sure.
role, and he is in, post Batman, action movie, dark side
Yeah.
sort of
Yeah, he's kind of leaving
heyday.
nice guys in the past a little bit, Multiplicity and those type of movies, and embracing villainy for a little bit here, and boy, does he enjoy it. Yeah, don't take the law enforcement stuff or the medical stuff. Speaking as somebody who's been in the hospitals and who's actually had like bone marrow biopsies and no, I mean, it is ridiculous, but it's stupidly entertaining. Also, this movie won Andy Garcia an award, an ALMA award, which is, of course, the, let's see, the American Latino Media Arts Award, and his category was Outstanding Actor in a Feature Film in a Crossover Role. So maybe, I mean, crossover to what? Maybe crossover to mainstream or crossover to, he's a cop, but he's also breaking into FBI headquarters. So it was directed by Barbet Schroeder, based on Desperate Measures by David Klass and written by Klass. He has kind of talked about his frustrations with it, that they made the kid too weak, and he sort of was doing research with childhood cancer patients at the LA Children's Cancer Wards and thought they were, more optimistic and energetic than the way they kind of portrayed the kid in the movies. So he had issues with it on that front. And I can see that as well, because he's kind of like the dead wife. He's a little bit of a prop. And but it's a showdown between two men, which is what Andy Garcia does very, very well. Yes.
He does it very well. And Michael Keaton is so much fun in this movie. I mean,
Oh
I
my
think the
God.
first time I saw it, I was just rolling my eyes and was turned off by
It
how
was a little
much fun he was
ridiculous.
having. I mean, it's a lot of ridiculous. It's incredibly ridiculous.
Campy.
But now watching it, I'm very fascinated by this film. It is stupid. But it's very comfortable with its role as just a concept movie. And you kind of go with it. And if you can go with it, it'll take you on a ride. And you get to see some very interesting visuals and ideas. You get to see somebody break his own thumb and the escape stuff that he's planned, that Michael Keaton has planned, is pretty great. You got some people on fire inside the hospital. That's one of the real treats of seeing movies that were made more than 20 years ago, is that you get real fire on film, and it's not CGI looking shit. It's like, oh, these are real flames and this looks incredible. Just find real average stuff from 25, 30 years ago,
Suddenly it looks
and it looks
incredible.
incredible, right? But I'm also interested in this film because of Barbet Schrader, who's a kind of like Mike Figgis, had a brief, a little bit more of a Hollywood career than Figgis did, but somebody who came up
New
in
wave.
Europe and French New Wave stuff, and then retreated afterwards and has continued making films outside of Hollywood and non-English language stuff. So just does not get much attention. But he had a real interesting run of Hollywood films, including a lot of thrillers. Single White Female was his biggest hit.
Kiss of Death, I think, is a blast.
I fucking love Kiss of
Oh my
Death.
God, I don't like the taste of metal in my mouth.
Yeah, it's an excellent remake that we did talk
Scenery chewing Nicolas Cage. I love it. Yeah, so that one is good. And he also made, let me see here.
Reversal of Fortune, one, Jeremy
Oh,
Irons.
yes. Hello. Murder by Numbers with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Gosling. So he is, he's handy with the thriller, Barbet Schroeder. And an interesting career for sure.
There's a through line to some of his thrillers. This one, Desperate Measures, Before and
Ooh, Before and
After,
After.
Murder by Numbers, and Our Lady of Assassins. They're all concerned with child killers. They're
That's
all,
interesting. Yep.
there's a real kind of through line there with, all these different shades of child killers,
Yes.
Before and After being, I don't want to give away what happens in that one, but there's some complexity there between, the levels of guilt in a crime. And, in that one, Liam Neeson as the father of the killer son, he breaks laws too, in protecting his son, just like Andy Garcia is doing in this one. I mean, there's a great line, that's in the trailer of Desperate Measures of, how many more people today are going to have to die so that your son can live? And that's pretty much what, on a much more toned down, dramatic, more realistically dramatic stuff. That's what Liam Neeson is wrestling with in Before and After. Is what kind of crimes am I willing to do for my son? And of course, in Desperate Measures, the son is not a killer, but the son is thinking about he because
His
he's.
mortality and
Well, he's thinking about death, but he's also disturbed to know that he's going to be getting Oh,
DNA,
for sure. bone marrow from a killer, and they
Yeah.
have lots of conversations, and I mean they're, really puddle deep conversations about, is I don't, I he's gonna be inside me, I'm gonna be,
Yeah.
I'm gonna have part of this killer living in me. And
Yeah.
then Michael Keaton and the kid have a, conversation where Keaton, sees the
I
kid has some
know. That
security,
was
he's like,
intense. Yeah.
you and me, we are the same. And he's like, no, I'm not the same. And he's like, well, we're
Yeah.
compatible. There's this thing,
Building
and then
block. Yeah.
Murder by Numbers deals with teenagers who are killing as an intellectual
Yeah.
exercise, sort of a Leopold and Loeb situation. And Our Lady of Assassins is about teenage gangs in South America, who are, they're ruthless killers, but they're also kind of these young kids. There's this real grappling of, innocence and experience in this run. So I think Barbet Schroeder is an interesting filmmaker, and again, someone like Figgis, I don't really feel qualified to talk much about what makes him tick, what really drives him as a filmmaker. Barfly would have been the first thing I saw from him, the Charles Bukowski
Mickey Rourke.
adaptation.
Yeah.
And but he is, more than just a maker of mainstream trashy
He's very good with
thrillers.
actors, and obviously actors love working with him. I mean, some of these films, I mean, also he's good with actors embracing sides of themselves that they don't normally show. And so that's something that I've noticed about his movies. Yeah, I think he gets really good performances out of people, I would say. And maybe that does come with, producing some of those early new wave films for sure. Maybe a respect for actors. Of course, my goodness, Reversal of Fortune, two of the best performances right there. And yeah, so it's worth seeing. Is it as good as Reversal of Fortune? Hell no. But it's definitely worth seeing. So
It
I
is not
think
a boring movie.
there you go. You will
Once
not be able to fall asleep in this one, damn it.
this
Yes.
throws you right in, and if you,
And it's
if you
short.
take
It's
a
like a
ride,
100 minutes. Yeah.
it
Close to
moves
that
along
tight 90.
situation very, very effectively. They do get out of the hospital, and once it's out of the hospital, it kind of opens up to, there's a pretty decent car chase in
Yeah.
there. I crack up every time I see Michael Keaton driving along in the pickup, listening to Creedence Clearwater Revival, singing
Yes.
along to it. Just
That's hilarious. Yeah.
as this guy who spent most of his life in prison, getting
Of
out and,
course, he would hear something older. Yeah.
it's not that it's hard to find that on the radio, certainly not in 98, but
That was fun.
it's a fun little moment. Michael Keaton's eyebrows versus Andy Garcia's Widow's Peak is a very good, cinematic showdown.
Hair being used well, yes. And
I definitely recommend it for that.
yeah, as far as other really great Andy Garcia performances, in the 90s, I don't remember loving the film, but I do think he was very good in When a Man Loves a Woman, Night Falls on Manhattan, which I talked about earlier this year with Jason Bailey for our Gandolfini episode. He was in a lot in the 90s. We've mentioned, of course, his 80s stuff, but he was in Jennifer 8 and did a good job in that. Dead Again, Hero. I remember seeing that one in the theater, but I couldn't tell you anything about it now. Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead. Let's see. And then moving on, he started also to make things on his own.
Do think he's kind of once he's done with his leading man run. He does get some pretty interesting films that he gets to be part of an ensemble. I love, he's the heel in the Ocean's 11 series. He gets to be
Yes.
smooth, but he also gets to be kind of a prick and then threatening in Ocean's 12. He's really pretty menacing. He's showed up as the shadowy law enforcement guy that you're not sure about, and things like confidence and smoking aces. And what I think is probably the masculine hairdo, most important masculine hairdo movie of our time, Guy Ritchie's Wrath of Man.
Wow, I love
That
Wrath of Man, my goodness. And yes, he is in that. Yeah.
he's in that, and that is just an absolute murderer's row of masculine hairdos. Very important to study if you too are losing your hair like me and feeling, a little vulnerable about it. Go, check out Wrath of Man. There's something for everybody in there. Every person in that film is quaffed.
Yes.
Even Jason Statham out front with the chrome dome,
I
is
love Statham. Yes.
I love him, but that's a do. He's wearing his
Oh,
do that way against, all the incredible supporting
heads of
cast,
hair. Yeah.
making hair are they
The
really tell a
story.
story.
Yes.
Yeah,
Another
and
really good one.
Garcia hanging out, in the background of that one, he absolutely belongs.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the one I was blanking on before was he was nominated for the Emmy and Golden Globes for it, which was for Love or Country, the Arturo Sandoval story, which was made for HBO. So he also started to do some HBO work. He directed on as well, and
Lost City.
The Lost
Lost
City,
City.
yes. Yes. And so he's, continued to have a very extensive, diverse career.
He's,
Yeah.
you know what? I saw the Steve Martin Pink Panther movies for the first time this year.
Oh, wow.
And I
He's
couldn't
in it.
believe. Well, he's in the second one, and he made me laugh.
That's
There's a scene where,
a good compliment
Steve
among
Martin is
Steve Martin.
doing his, in ridiculous and absolutely insulting French accent, which is never gets old. Peter
Yeah.
Sellers did it great. And I put off seeing these movies because I was such a fan of the original movies.
Yes.
They were pretty foundational to me. And I thought I would just feel like I didn't like these weren't worth it, but grudgingly liked the first one and then really liked the second one. There's a lot of good stuff between Martin and Emily Mortimer, and Martin and Lily Tomlin have a great few scenes together. But Steve Martin doing a ridiculous French accent and Andy Garcia doing a ridiculous Italian accent,
Yeah,
either one really being able to understand each other, is pretty delightful
a
and
great
pretty
bit.
light on his feet. And apparently it rubbed off working with Steve Martin, because then he did the and I haven't seen it, but the new Father of the Bride version, he's in the Steve Martin role.
Oh, I love that.
So have not seen that.
I haven't either.
But
Yeah.
he's
So we can't
he
even
can be
comment
funny
on the
too, right?
hair in that, you guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Jed, I want to thank you so much for doing this. I promise to let you choose the topic next time, or maybe even the title. I mean, bring me the hair of Andy Garcia. I think I'm going to call that. This will be the subtitle for this episode for sure.
Excellent.
Yes.
That makes it worth everything,
Oh,
I'm sure.
yes. Well, thank you so much, Jed.
Absolutely. I'd love to. What an honor to be your first episode back.
Yes.
I miss you, friend.
Missed
It's good
you.
to hear you doing this again, 'cause yeah, you're one of the best things out there to listen to, because you cover so many different topics and you
Oh, thank
let
you.
people follow their weird little obsessions, and you've introduced me to a lot of things I wouldn't have tried without your podcast. So thanks for doing it. Glad you're back.
Thank you.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research, equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as $1 per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more, by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching. This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.